Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and CFRC's Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering details on the future plans for the Lunch by George food program.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. After 40 years serving Kingston residents experiencing food insecurity from St. George's Cathedral, Lunch by George has officially relocated to a new distribution site on Wellington Street. It was announced in November 2025 that Lunch by George, operated by independent nonprofit organization Outreach St. George's Kingston, would relocate from church premises by June 30, 2026. In the November release, St. George's Cathedral, quote, regretfully concluded that it no longer has the capacity to host the Lunch by George program from the church facility. The church went on to state, quote, over the years, as the number of unhoused people included many more with mental health challenges and drug dependencies, the nature of the program changed to require much greater security. This situation also began to impact the operations of the church and, more critically, the staff at St. George's. Over the past few months, local organizations, including St. Lawrence College, the City of Kingston, United Way, and the Community Foundation for Kingston and Area, came together to support the move to a new location and transition to a new distribution model. In the new model, launched at the end of June, meals are prepared in the teaching kitchen at St. Lawrence College and transported daily to the new downtown distribution site using a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter provided by Mercedes-Benz Kingston. I met with Tom Iveson, Chief Administrator with Outreach St. George's Kingston, at the new distribution site last week to discuss the transition.
Well, to start us off, you've been operating under this new model for just over a week. How's the transition been so far?
Fabulous. It's gone better than what we had hoped and planned. Our volunteers love it. Our guests love it. We're right in person. Previously, we had a takeout window and it was a barrier. And looking back in hindsight, whereas this is much more open and welcoming.
And there's a lot of partnerships behind the scenes making this happen. I was wondering if you could kind of paint a picture of how everyone's contributing here.
A lot of partnerships. I'm very thankful to the City of Kingston. I'd been in touch with my counterpart there, or an official, since last year. And she was instrumental in terms of reaching out to St. Lawrence College. We already had established a relationship with the United Way. We're an anchor agency. So they've been supportive. Mercedes-Benz Kingston has been fabulous as well.
And Iveson says more partners continue to be added to the list.
So we've had two new collaborations come together in the last week. One is the Community Foundation of Kingston and Area, which provided us a grant to help us move. But their team is going to spend a day volunteering up at the college with us. And secondly, the mayor's office reached out, and they have an event every year called Mayor for a Day, where a young person can be mayor. So we've partnered up for that, and they'll be donating goods for Lunch by George.
Wow, so even more partnerships than we were already there when this all came together.
I'm juggling a lot of balls every day. More and more just keep getting added in. But it's great. It's wonderful.
For sure. And what has it meant for you, for all these organizations, to really rally behind this program?
It's really rewarding and satisfying. We work hard. Our head cook works really hard. In June, we put out 5,366 meals between breakfast and lunch. That took a lot of work. So it's a tough job, but more than worth it.
And just a few weeks into operating under this new model, the Lunch by George team is already thinking about what comes next.
Moving forward, what are you thinking about and what are you hoping for in the next few months?
Once we get our feet going here, we'd like to explore a second location. So potentially we could do maybe one breakfast here, but two lunches somewhere else. And we're talking to other partners about how that may work.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the review of Greater Napanee's encampment map after the discovery of a key discrepancy.
Thank you, Jesse. The Council of the Town of Greater Napanee has directed staff to establish a formal annual review process for the town's encampment education materials after officials discovered its public-facing map incorrectly suggested that parts of Lions Park could be used for camping, when in fact under the town's existing bylaw, the entire park falls within a protected setback from a licensed daycare. Council unanimously approved the direction at its meeting on Tuesday, July 14th, after hearing that the discrepancy stemmed from the way the town's original encampment protocol map was created using geographic information system data rather than on-site measurements. The decision does not amend the town's parks and public spaces bylaw or its encampment protocol. Instead, it establishes a formal process by reviewing and updating the educational materials that accompany the bylaw and that are used by town staff and community partners to explain where encampments may and may not be permitted. Explaining the staff report, Chief Administrative Officer Matthew Grant reminded Council that the town's protocol was created in response to court decisions recognizing that municipalities without adequate emergency shelter capacity cannot simply prohibit encampments on public property. He explained that because Greater Napanee does not operate an emergency shelter, individuals have a constitutional right in some circumstances to seek shelter on public property. The town's protocol establishes setback distances from sensitive areas, including playgrounds, licensed daycares, and critical infrastructure, to identify locations where encampments are not permitted while remaining consistent with those legal obligations. Grant said the educational map used by the town and community agencies was originally created through a desktop mapping exercise using GIS data. Earlier this year, however, staff were asked to review Lions Park after concerns were raised that it should fall within a setback from a nearby licensed daycare. According to the accompanying staff report, the educational map had become a critical piece of the town's outreach efforts because it provides a visual explanation of the bylaw for residents and community organizations. Staff noted that while the map suggested portions of Lions Park were outside sensitive area setbacks, the bylaw itself has also taken precedence whenever a discrepancy exists. The report also identified other information that could eventually be incorporated into future educational materials, including utility infrastructure, pipeline easements, environmental protection lands, and future wildfire risk mapping. Staff cautioned, however, that expanding the map without consultation had already created confusion among some community partners who mistakenly believed the town was expanding its encampment restrictions when no changes had been made to the bylaw itself. To avoid similar issues in the future, Council directed staff to establish a formal annual review process. Under the proposed system, residents, councillors, and town staff will be able to request reviews of specific locations with GIS and bylaw staff conducting on-site inspections where warranted. Rather than revising educational materials whenever a discrepancy is identified, updates would generally occur once each year, tentatively during January and February after consultation with community partners. Staff also indicated they intend to explore a web-based mapping tool that could eventually provide more flexible public information. During Council's discussion, Councillor Mike Shank asked whether people staying at the Lions Park encampment had already been notified of the revised interpretation. Grant said they had. Mayor Terry Richardson supported limiting updates to the educational materials to once each year, noting that frequent revisions could create unnecessary confusion. Less than 24 hours after Council discussed the report, the encampment at Lions Park had been cleared and town workers and equipment were cleaning the site.
Thank you to Dinah Jansen and Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from Brenda Little, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE Prince Edward County Radio, about the launch of a sports fundraiser in Prince Edward County.
Prince Edward County's friendship with Krusty Leaf Ukraine is taking shape through a local fundraising effort to support children in the war-affected municipality. The Rotary Club of Picton and the county have joined forces to raise money for soccer balls that will be sent to Krusty Leaf this fall. Don Leslie of the Picton Rotary Club tells us more. Don, you're part of the Picton Rotary that's a big part of this project. How did they come up with this idea?
Well, actually, we were approached by the mayor. So when council agreed to put a working group together, they wanted a sponsoring organization. So, and at that time, we had just had, I think, our second Ukrainian fundraising dinner. So it was kind of known in the community that we were already doing support to Ukraine. So he approached the club. I was the president at the time of the Rotary Club of Picton. And he said, look, we're looking for a sponsoring organization. Here's what you need to do. It's really to lend our expertise, particularly in things like fundraising and some organizing of events. That's really what they were looking for. So we were very pleased to put our name forward on it and join the working group.
And you've raised quite a bit of money so far, especially tonight with the donations. About how much have we got so far?
We had 4,000 coming in today, which was actually more than we thought we were going to get. I haven't counted the cash in the jar or who donated online. We got at least one more check for 250. So now we had the two soccer ball projects. We split them originally because it was about $8,000 for 400 soccer balls. And we didn't think we'd get the money that fast. But we have. So the first set of soccer balls will go off, that's the junior size, they'll go off to the elementary schools, and then we'll start working on the others. And the way this is going, hopefully we'll have it all there by the fall when they're back in school.
And they are also looking for school supplies. So is the Rotary looking into that right now? Or?
Yeah, it's not so much Rotary as it's the working group. So we've had people go out to some of the big school, like Staples and things like that. And we're working through that because a lot of them have charity organizations. Because we like to kind of procure locally and ship it over there. Mm-hmm. We're not really, the working group and the municipality is not in there to just send money. Mm-hmm. We're not that type of an agreement. The friendship agreement with Krasiev. We're looking into that. The other one they really need is portable generators. And that's really for the children when they have an air raid. When they go into the shelters, they have all their tablets in that, and they just don't have, if they can be in there for quite a while, they just don't have a way to power them. So that's something we're looking at, but that's European, and that's a lot of it. But that's the long-term projects that we're looking at.
Do you have anything else to add?
Nope. We're just, as we really get going now, we'll be looking for community support. So when these initiatives come up, I understand from the municipality, the website will be up shortly for more information. And that's where people can come. And that's what we're looking at, is really get the community in this. And the working group can kind of sit back and let the fine people of Prince Edward County handle the rest.
I asked Mayor Ferguson about the project.
Well, we went through a fairly extensive research project trying to identify a community that was of similar size and population to Prince Edward County. And after several months of research, a team of researchers identified CrossFit as a pretty close match. So that's how it was effectively chosen.
And this agreement is really not war effort. This is more supportive of their culture and children and sports and education. Is that right?
Yeah, it's not to support the war effort. We're not providing weapons or anything like that. It's to really support the residents and the kids of Krusty Leaf. And that's why the working group is starting with soccer balls, because Mayor Ostrovska of Krusty Leaf identified that as one of their immediate needs. So that's where we'll start, and we'll see where it goes from there. But the idea is to support the kids and the population of Krusty Leaf.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Now over to Genevieve Hinch with a story by Keith Dempsey, LJR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about the possible easing of waterfront setback rules.
Thank you, Dinah. Waterfront property owners in the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands could soon have more flexibility to install small structures such as gazebos, hot tubs, and decks closer to the shoreline without having to seek costly minor variances. During Monday's Committee of the Whole meeting, Township Council held a statutory public meeting on a proposed amendment to the Township Zoning Bylaw that would permit certain detached accessory structures within the municipality's 30-meter setback from high water mark of lakes and rivers. If approved, the amendment would allow detached structures with a combined maximum footprint of 14 square meters, 151 square feet, to be located within the setback without requiring a minor variance application. The proposed changes stem from recommendations made earlier this year by the Township's Committee of Adjustment, after members reviewed several applications involving small waterfront structures. Con Todd Robertson, who sits on the Committee of Adjustment, said the recommendation was intended to strike a balance between maintaining planning oversight and reducing costs for homeowners. Planning staff told the council the proposed amendment is the first step in the final planning process. Monday's public meeting was held to review public input before a recommendation is brought forward for council's consideration at a future meeting. As of last week, the township had not received any written comments from the public, and the proposed amendment has also been circulated to township departments and external agencies for technical review. The following public meeting, no members of the public came forward to speak on the proposal. A final decision will be made at a future council meeting after staff review any technical comments received.
Thank you to Genevieve Hinch and Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with the Kingston Sports Report, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays.
This is part one of the OUA football season preview, brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. We begin our season preview with last year's 11th place team, the University of Toronto Varsity Blues. 2025 was a roller coaster year for the program, who came out of the gates hot with a record-setting passing offense led by quarterback Scott Barnett and all-Canadian wide receiver Chris Joseph. Barnett threw for over 600 yards and four touchdowns. 300 of those 600 yards went to Chris Joseph himself, en route to a 42-23 season-opening victory over the Carleton Ravens. Toronto would drop back-to-back overtime thrillers to York and Waterloo before losing to the Gales at Varsity Stadium by a scoreline of 44-6. And trust me, folks, I was there that day. It could have been a lot worse than that. The Gales' defense generated five interceptions, completely flummoxing this explosive passing offense. That game brought the Blues plummeting back down to earth, as they would lose their next three games in convincing fashion. They did nearly play spoiler for the Ottawa Gigis, taking them to their limit in the regular season finale, but that's as close as Toronto would come to a win after week one. Let's take a look at their 2025 stats. Out of 11 teams, they were 10th in points for with 170, 10th in points per game with 21.3, 8th in total yards with 3,100, they were 6th in passing yards with 2,446, and they were 9th in rushing yards with 832, which works out to about 104 yards per game. Defensively, they finished 8th in points allowed with 277, giving up about 34.6 points per game. They were 7th in yards allowed per game with 451. They were 8th in their pass defense, giving up 308 yards per game. But impressively, they were 4th overall in the conference in rush yards allowed per game at just 142.9. Their linebacking core was really stout. I think they did a great job against the run. But unfortunately, the porous pass defense did cost them in the long run. Toronto finished the season with a point differential of minus 107, which was 9th in the conference. Over their last five seasons, here is their record. They finished 3-3 in 2021, 4-4 in 2022, 2-6 in 2023, and they had back-to-back 1-7 seasons in 2024 and 2025. We've talked about the past, let's talk about the near future for the Blues. Admittedly, it has been a steady decline for the program after back-to-back playoff appearances, but it's not all doom and gloom. They have a stronger talent pool than their poor record would indicate. They've got all-Canadian wide receiver Chris Joseph back after his incredible 2025. They're also going to return a number of key players on a strong offensive line, and of course, some solid options at linebacker. They are losing Jake Osine to graduation, who was the dynamic part of that 1-2 punch with Chris Joseph. And from what my sources tell me, Scott Barnett may not be their starting quarterback next year, even if he is back. There is an apparent quarterback controversy brewing in Toronto, and from what I've heard, Caleb Donahue is rumored to be the favorite to start week one. The Blues have a tough schedule in 2026 as they kick things off in week one versus the defending Yates Cup champion Queens Gaels. After that, they have tough matchups with Ottawa on the road, Western at home, Windsor on the road, Guelph at home, McMaster on the road, then games against York at home, and they close things out at Carleton. That is six straight playoff teams on the schedule for the Blues, a grueling gauntlet for a program that has struggled with health and consistency. And I'll be honest, I don't have the Blues favored in any of those games, and I am predicting an 0-8 record in 2026. I do think they will finish last in the conference. I do think they'll be competitive in most of their games. But I can't see this squad overcoming anybody with how they are currently laid out. And I hate saying that because I love the Toronto Varsity Blues. I think they're a fantastic historic program. But I do think a shakeup is needed in Toronto, and this season will be the impetus for that.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that update, and also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Tuesday, July 21st. 25 degrees was your high, 60% chance of showers moving into the evening, where it'll drop down to 15 degrees. Wednesday, July 22nd, 21 is your high, with a 30% chance of precipitation, dropping down to 14 overnight. Thursday, July 23rd, 24 degrees is your high with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 15 overnight. Friday, July 24th, 25 is your high, so slightly warmer with a mix of sun and cloud in the forecast, dropping down to 15 overnight. And then kicking off the weekend, Saturday, July 25th, high of 25, and you guessed it, a mix of sun and cloud. Sunday, July 26th, looking like a beautiful end to the weekend here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of 25 with a mix of sun and cloud, but more sun moving into the afternoon. Monday, July 27th, we do have rain in the forecast. 50% chance of rain, going to be humid and cloudy. 27 is your high. And then Tuesday, July 28th, we've got a high of 29 degrees with heavier rain and a higher percentage sitting around 65% here in the city of Kingston. Back to Genevieve Hinch for CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, workshops, markets, or family-friendly activities, there is plenty happening in Kingston this week, so let's get into it. Wednesday offers plenty to do, beginning with silent reading on Sydenham Street before games in the square and the Swinging Summer Concert Series takeover downtown in the evening. This week also features a free Movies in the Square screening of But I'm a Cheerleader. Music fans can watch Taryn McKenna and Vince DeBeal at the Belvedere Hotel, Sean McCollin at the Cove Inn, Fiverr at Many Moons Events, and Luella as part of the Sound Waves concert series at Spicer's Dockside Grill, and of course, an open mic at Timeout Bar. Thursday features the Kingston Public Market, a community picnic at Cultivate Arts Commons, a Princess Monaco film screening at Robert Sutherland Hall, and the Story Stitched in Fabric workshop at the Tet Center. Another Movies in Square screening following the School of Rock. Live music includes Rob Moore at the Cove Inn, Pete's Wolf Island Records musical review at Hotel Wolf Island, Sam Coons and Ryan Gallagly at the RCHA Club, Battle of the Bands, Punk vs. Metal at Daft Brewing, Spaced, Terminator and Anchor Lines at the Broom Factory, and the National Youth Orchestra of Canada at the Isabel Bader Center. Friday is packed with entertainment. The off-season dance festival gets underway at Hotel Wolf Island, while Kicking It Country returns to the City Hall Amphitheater. Music highlights include River City Junction at the Cove Inn, the Celtic Kitchen Party as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, Tyler Brett Forks at Mayor's Creek Brewing Company, Marion Dexler Band at the RCHA Club, Mellow Lily at the Turninog, and the Astros at the Toucan. Heading into Saturday, you can browse the Kingston Public Market, catch Chef Dimanche at City Hall Amphitheater, enjoy Saturday sessions in Confederation Park, or take part in Vibrant Voices, a song circle for the 2S LGBTQIA+ at the Central Library. The off-season dance festival continues on Wolf Island. Live music includes Matt Dixon at the Cove Inn, Andrew Mack Band at Spicer's Dockside, Outskirts as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, and the Howe Island Rockin' the Rock 2026. Wrapping things up Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market returns alongside the Cataraqui Indigenous Market in Confederation Park, as well as Yoga and Battery Park. Music includes Gerald McGrath at Finkel's Shore Park, Smellowship and Midnight Magic Rodeo Show at Hotel Wolf Island, Spencer Evans at Time Out Bar, Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn, Princess Towers with Efren Strange and Emily Steele at Hotel Wolf Island, and live band karaoke with the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. That's your weekly events and concerts calendar for July 20th through the 26th. For more information on any of these events, visit CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. The events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening and have a great week, Kingston.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.